Steve Yabsley.
And let's welcome our next guest to the programme. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by the author, James L. Williams. Welcome, James.
Hi, Steve. How are we doing?
Thank you so much for coming on the programme. Now, James is going to tell us about his new mystery thriller, The Reluctant Villain. And we'll talk about that in a moment, James. But let's just establish your credentials, if you don't mind. You were born and raised in North Wales. I wasn't quite sure how to pronounce the name of the place. What's it called?
Bettercourt.
I see. The youngest of five, I see. So it must have been a pretty busy household.
It was, but it was quite a range of ages from... I was the youngest. One of my brothers was 17.
I see. And what did your parents do? What was your dad's job?
That was a postman.
I see. Did you see much of him? He was out early in the morning, was he?
He was out early in the morning, and we didn't actually see him on Christmas Day until 1963, when they stopped delivering then.
Gosh.
Every Christmas he was working.
Well, I hope he got a bonus at Christmas. What about your education? You went to school locally as well, did you?
I did, yes.
And were you a good pupil or a naughty pupil?
I was neither. Okay. Just an average pupil.
Straight down the middle. Sadly, you've had a long battle with your eyesight over the years. And I know that in 1957, you were sent to London to be fitted with contact lenses. And in a way, that was the sort of pioneering development at the time, wasn't it, James?
It was, yes.
Tell me what they did when you went to London. What do you remember of it back in the 50s?
Well, I was about 7, 8 years old, and the man who was treating me was Mr. Meredith, a very tall man. And I had to stand on almost like a plinth with a very bright light above me so he could see what he was doing. And I even almost felt like passing out sometimes, but it never happened. One incident, I was there in London for about three weeks, and I went away for the weekend. My mother was with me, and she dropped one of the lenses and broke it. It's a glass lens. And Mr. Breather said, "You tell other people about breaking things, but you can't trust the parents."
Oh.
But anyway, it was fixed, and everything went fine from there.
Now, James, when I was a young man, I used to work for a company that produced contact lenses. It was called Lenska Laboratories in Bristol, and they produced gas permeable and soft lenses. And, of course, those early contact lenses, as you mentioned, were glass. How uncomfortable was it in your eye to start with?
To start with, it was a little bit uncomfortable, and there was a sort of a special technique of putting it in under your top lid and then pulling your bottom lid down and slipping it in. I recall when I was working in the garage, I had a slight accident I was supposed to be crushing all the cans, and the handle of the crusher swung away and came back up under the pendulum. And this was a rod about a metre long, solid metal, and it caught me straight across the left eye.
Ooh.
Yeah. And of course, I had to rush to get the lens out, but it was okay. My eye was okay. It took about a week for it to swelling to go down, but it survived it.
Blimey, what a stroke of bad luck. You left school, I know, in 1964, and you worked locally. What sort of jobs were you doing at that time?
Well, the first job was in a local greengrocer's store. And I was actually, one of the jobs we had to do was to go around to people's houses and take orders so that it could be delivered, the shopping could be delivered the same day. A bit like the lockdown.
Yeah, like they do it these days. You're ahead of your time. You're a pioneer.
Yeah.
Sadly, your eyesight deteriorated over the years. You've had various treatments and several operations. And indeed, you moved to Bristol in the 70s in 1973. Your eyesight got worse and you were eventually registered blind back in the 90s. And your career has changed to adapt to your eyesight, hasn't it? Tell me about the jobs you've done over the years. You mentioned the motor trade. What else have you done?
The motor trade. Then I was working for a few months. Then I went to Exeter to do training catering. And that's what brought me to Bristol eventually, because I met up with somebody else on the catering course, a chap called Ron Hewlett, who's no longer with us, unfortunately. And he said at the end of the course, if I couldn't find a job in North Wales, I could come down to Bristol and join him and his family and work from there. That's what happened. I moved down in 70... At the end of 73, I moved down to Bristol.
Well, ultimately, you were made redundant in 1994. You went to local college to study computers and early audio technology, and that really was early. I mean, back then in the mid-90s, it was quite sort of rudimentary, wasn't it?
Oh, it was, yes, really. And there was a little choice in the different speech programmes. Now there's a much very wider choice.
Yeah.
And they can almost be, you know, human sounding, but there are still some synthetic voices.
But just talking generally about the strides in technology, I mean, a lot of people these days are familiar with smart speakers and smart television stuff where you can just ask the computer, you just speak what you want and it will play it. I mean, it's amazing the way it's come on over the last 10 years, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Well, you ultimately...
Like me, it's helped a lot.
Oh, it must have helped you enormously. You ultimately, in those days, bought your own computer, and then you began writing, didn't you? You also, I should mention, worked in the voluntary sector. You worked in the charity sector. You've been helping disabled people. What sort of work have you been doing with them?
Well, I first started doing that in the mid-80s. It was called Bristol 1000 Community Trust, and there were several projects set up where... they helped, well, some disabled people and other posts. Then I moved on to Bristol Royal Society for the Blind, which is then based in Fishponds at Maytree's Home for the Blind.
Well, you are now retired. You live in Ashton in Bristol. Do you follow the football at all? You're a City fan, or couldn't you
care? Definitely, yes, City fan, yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't it clog up all the streets, though, when they play ordinarily? You know, outside of lockdown, you have cars everywhere, don't you?
There is. I mean, when we moved, when we got married and moved to Ashton, it was in late 77, I think it was, you couldn't park on only one side of the road. And that's, you know, that wasn't too bad. Then they changed it, and now if you go out and don't come back after 1 o'clock, you'd be lucky to find a parking space.
You must have been there during their time in the old First Division when they were playing the likes of Liverpool and stuff. It was exciting times, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was a regular down the City Ground then.
Well, these days you've devoted yourself to writing. Have you always wanted to be a writer?
I never even given a thought about it until I went to college and I used writing really to get used to the keyboard and do different, you know, different things. I was more interested in spreadsheets and things, but I thought, well, if I do a bit of writing, I'll be used to the keyboard and do things a lot quicker. And somebody said to me, well, the one thing that everybody can write about is themselves, write their own story, life story. Well, I didn't actually do that, but I was doing some kind of writing. And then one day I just, this is a bit boring, so I'll try something different. And I started writing what I thought was something for myself, and then it developed.
Well, you ultimately published your first novel, Ghostly Witness, in 2017, a stunner of a detective novel with more than a few psychic and paranormal twists. You always had an interest in the paranormal?
Not always. It's just something that's come to be, well, I would say, I went down to Torquay and I met someone there who was very interested in it, and she pointed me in the right direction of the things to read about. It's sort of, I've lost that viewpoint now. I don't do so much in that viewpoint.
Now, the central character in the first book, Ghostly Witnesses, was Constable Vic Holland, who you've returned to in other books. And I know with the first book, I'm not sure if it's true of the subsequent ones, for the sale of each book, you made a donation of profits to the Blind Veterans Association, which is a great thing to do. The second book was Fatal Revenge, and that featured a Canadian connection, didn't it?
Yes, it did, yeah. Vic Holland and his wife and family moved to Canada.
Have you got any knowledge of Canada? Is it a place you know, or do you just pluck it out of the
I've never been there. The only knowledge I've got is what I've read up on it. But I do have a contact there. It's actually the young lad who was our page boy at the wedding. He's moved to Canada, and I still keep in touch with him.
Well, let's talk about your brand new book. It's called The Reluctant Villain. Now, this is a prequel to Ghostly Witness. Just to sort of, before we get to the new book, just give us the gist of the first novel, Ghostly Witnesses. What was that about?
That was about Vic Holland, who came across, who was a PC, who had moved to a new area, and he came across two young thugs who broke into a shop, and he chased them. but they escaped after trapping him under the floor of a building. He was then went to hospital and had his wounds dealt with, and eventually he met up with Ernie Newsham, a former policeman who was supposed to be the person that kept all PCs fit. He retired from the police force, and but Ernie had a bit of a bad side to his character.
Well, the new book, as I mentioned, it is a prequel to Ghostly Witnesses, and yeah. It asks the question, what drives a man to commit a crime? It's described as the story of two young villains and how they, Mark and Jerry, were drawn into the murky crime world of ex-policeman Ernie Newsham. Just tell me a little bit about that story then, the gist of it.
Well, the gist of it is, as I said, that one of the characters, Jerry, was not a criminal. He had a good career in engraving to look forward to, and he had been, as you go back to the psychic bit, he had been warned by a lady who did work for to keep the engraving work going, otherwise he would regret it for the rest of his life. But circumstances changed in his work situation, where his current boss retired and a new boss took over and made life difficult for him. There was then a point where Jerry was out of work, and he was more or less trapped by Ernie Newsham into becoming a villain. And it's going from petty thefts to eventually to murder.
Only takes one bad apple to get the ball rolling, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Have you enjoyed your career as a writer in recent years?
I have, yes, I have. I just wish I'd started earlier.
Yeah. And what's been the response from readers that you've heard about?
I've had a few, some good responses. The thing is, it's getting known and getting your book published, because the big writing companies and the big stores, they don't seem to have much of an interest in a newcomer, in a new writer. You have to establish yourself before they will really pick up on you. They're more interested in a celebrity focus, and the kiss and tell story, or a sports person. They only look at those as potential sales for them. Although I have heard that one CEO of one of the main publishing companies said, we spend about 70% of our money on these kiss and tell or celebrity books, and most of them are rubbish, but we have to do them anyway.
James, be honest, would you ever write a kiss and tell?
If I had one.
Well, if people want to find out more about you, you've got a website. It's jameslwilliams.co.uk. All the books we've mentioned, Ghostly Witnesses, Fatal Revenge and The Reluctant Villain, are published by the Book Guild. Are you working on a fourth book at the moment?
I am working, yes. That's a different, totally different scenario. It's nothing to do with this. It's actually a slight comedy. It's called Find the Groom.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Thank you for joining me on the programme today, James.
Can I just say people can get, they can purchase the book not only from the usual outlets, but they can also go online to thebookguild.co.uk /shop. And they might find some other interesting books there as well from other people.
Lovely. Every success, James. Thanks for joining me today.
Okay. Cheers, Dave. All the best.
There you go. That's James L. Williams, a mystery thriller writer. His new book is The Reluctant Villain. It's the prequel to Ghostly Witnesses. And there's also a sequel as well called Fatal Revenge. You can find out all the details on his website, jameslwilliams.co.uk.